Okay, we're on Dalet Amud Aleph, more than halfway through the page, a little more than halfway through the page. So it'll probably be 4A, either 2 or 3. And we'll go back. We'll just go back 3-4 lines from what we started yesterday. Ve'omer Rav Yehuda Marav. Another statement of Yehuda Marav. By the way, regarding that machlokas with the mikvah, so I just double-checked. The halacha is, one of what the halacha is, exactly like the way we understand the chachamim with the second version.
Oh.
In other words, the chachamim say the only way a mikvah is possible is if it has 3 lugim of water and it looks like water. That's the only way the mikvah is possible.
Okay.
All right? So if you have less than 3 lugim of water, never possible.
Right.
Even if some milk came in, it looks like water. Never possible. If you have 3 lugim, only if it looks like water, it looks like wine, it's not possible. That's what we hold like. The question was, did Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav agree to the rabbis or not? Remember? And was he going like Rabbi Yochanan Nuri or also like the rabbis? But that is halacha. So when Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav said his statement, it will also, halacha will fit in like the rabbis. Fine. So the next statement, we'll just quickly go over that first part. We'll give you a second interpretation, though, beyond what we gave you yesterday. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, another statement. Chavis mlei amayim, a barrel full of water. Shenafel yam agadol, falls into the Mediterranean Sea. Hatov l'sham, if someone goes and tries to be told himself to take his tumah off by going into the mikvah. Lo also l'tfilah, going to the mikvah will not work over here. Why? So yesterday we gave you Rashi's shot. We're going to add Tosa's shot for you. So first we have a chayshina. We're concerned lest l'shlo shalugim, for 3 lugim, shalo yaho b'mokamecha, that they should not be in one place, which will cause the person to remain tummy. So yesterday we gave you Rashi's shot. Let's just go that over a minute. Remember we said there's a rabbinic problem. What's the rabbinic problem? Let's say you go to a kosher mikvah on the day you're supposed to go to the mikvah, and then you go into a second mikvah, so to speak, right, where it's only 3 lugim of a swimming pool. You go to drawn water.
Yeah.
Well, we say it rabbinically, biblically, he's totally tar. But the rabbi says he's not tar. Why? Because people will see him and think that's the reason why he's tar. They're not going to know that he went to a kosher mikvah beforehand. So the rabbi slap on this saying it's not good. So therefore, that was what Rashi was telling us. And therefore, if there's 3 lugim of water in the Mediterranean Sea, so he went into the Mediterranean Sea, he was toivel properly, but then he could also have moved into the 3 lug of water, which is not proper, and therefore it wouldn't work rabbinically. Okay, now, we're going
to
now...
If he went into the Mediterranean Sea and then went into a...
The same problem. We're just picking. Our issue is, are we concerned that these 3 lug are still...
We went to a mitzvah that was kosher, 100%.
I'm just telling you, that's the general law. That's not this case here.
Okay.
This case is he went into the Mediterranean Sea.
That body of water, where?
I'm just saying, so that body of water, so there's 3 log of barrel water that's not kosher water. So the concern is that after the valid immersion of the body, he may have passed through the drawn water in the Mediterranean Sea.
Very unlikely.
Tosfos raised an obvious difficulty. It's a well-known rule that when drawn water is brought into contact with a valid mikvah of 40 saw, how do we have kosher mikvahs today? The drawn water is subsumed in the mikvah and it assumes the status of mikvah water. This process is known as hashaka. In other words, if you have a kosher mikvah, kosher mikvah, 40 saw, and now you pour water in, regular drawn water, the mikvah's kosher. That's all. Mikvah's kosher. You can put in tons or none. The mikvahs we have are way more than 40 saw.
Mm-hmm.
Way 40 saw. You just don't barely get. You could barely scrunch your body like this, and then that's 40 saw. Okay, and if he's got many, many more times, and they don't have 40 saw of rainwater in there, they do not have 40 saw of rainwater. You wouldn't want to go into the rainwater over there. But what do? They put another
tank.
The mikvah that you go in does not have the rainwater. The rainwater is in a separate mikvah, but the two are connected. And therefore, we can put all the water, drawn water, right in this mikvah. But then there's a connection between the two. And they associate the waters kiss, as it were. And then that 40 saw makes all the drawn water okay.
Rabbi, 40 saw and 3 lugim. What?
30 lugim is way smaller. Way smaller.
3 lugim is smaller.
Yeah, yeah. Way smaller. Way smaller. So okay, anyway. It would be hard. It would be very hard. Okay, I don't want to get into the math on that. I don't want to get into the math on that.
No, just the space that's in
there. Yeah, okay, fine. Anyway, so now here's the problem. If so, even if the drawn water remained in one place in the Mediterranean Sea,
exactly,
should be of no consequence, since the water will have assumed the status of mikvah water through hashaka. Because drawn water, when it mixes,
that's it.
Okay. Even if it's on its own, but it's touching the water.
Right. That's what Shelley said.
Because of this problem, Tosafot accept a different reading of Yehuda's ruling. See over there, we're going to have to leave it for over there. It's a question. Anyway, Rashi's, however, seems to be that although Hashak is effective in removing this qualification of drawn water regarding immersion, it nevertheless still retains the designation of drawn water in regard to the rabbinic tumah imposed on one who immersed his head and most of his body in drawn water. Okay, you have a question, but fine. Now, moving on. So, and we ended off yesterday. It's only a problem in the Mediterranean Sea. Tekoi v'kaima, the water sitting in its place. Avol Nahar Obama, but a swift-flowing, ordinary river. So we can assume that whatever was there already has gone past. And therefore, you don't have to worry about the 3 lugim of water. It's already gone out, and there's nothing to worry about. I'm sorry. The case of it is not 3 lugim of water. It was a barrel filled with water.
A barrel.
A barrel filled, not 3 lugim.
Yeah.
Right, so could be a lot of water that the person could have ritually immersed. It could be 40 saw. 40 saw, a barrel of water. So that's fine. But the concern, according to Rashi, is he might touch it, come to it afterwards. Okay. Now, this is where we're up to the new stuff. Tanya Namihachi, there's a brisa that supports Rav's ruling, which he just said. And the brisa says, Chavis Mleya Yayin, a barrel filled with wine. With wine. Shenav Faleyam. Hagadol falls into the Mediterranean Sea. Hatovel Sham, if you go into the mikveh there, lo olsala tefila. It doesn't help going to the mikveh. Chayshinin l'shlo shalugim shuvim shalo haye b'makom echad. Again, we're worried about the 3 lugim of water that are in one place. Okay, let's look in this case. Here's a little bit of a different issue.
Why?
I know, but we'll see. Yeah. In this case, we are concerned that part of the person's body may have been in the wine during the immersion, thereby invalidating it. Mm-hmm. Why? If even the smallest part of a person's body remains outside of the water of the mikvah, the immersion is not valid. Thus, if part of his body immersed in the wine floating in the sea, his immersion is not valid. Okay, so it's a different concern, not that rabbinic concern that Rashi mentioned before, but we're still concerned that the water is still in one place. That's the main idea.
The wine,
the water, in both cases, one case was water, one case was wine. So here, even though it's not a case of water, it's the same idea. Okay, we see from the Brisa, the sages were indeed concerned with the possibility that part of the barrel's contents may remain together at the site where they fell into the sea. Rav merely extends this principle to a barrel of water. So the Brisa talks about a barrel of wine. So if you're going into the Mediterranean Sea, maybe all the wine's in one place, hasn't dissipated yet, and you only need to have one finger in the wine, and that's not part of the mikvah. Okay? So what Rav Yehuda, Rav said, okay, I'll extend that principle that the Brisa said by wine, I'll talk by a barrel of Mayim Shu'uvim, drawn water, which is also not a kosher mikvah, and I'll extend the rabbinic prohibition that we're concerned. He went after the Mediterranean Sea. He can go into that barrel of water that would be a rabbinically make it not good. So it's the same idea that there is a concern that the water hangs in one place. That's the concern that we base. That's the main point over here.
So if we go back where we were the other day where we said we added 3 lugs of wine, and the mikvah is still kosher.
That's a very little bit. Did not change the color of the mikvah. Here,
about
all the wine's in one spot. So it's,
but the mikveh isn't. There's no motion with the water. It's going to probably just sit there. How do you know you're not getting water?
There, it's first of all, that's a very, very small amount. You're talking about 40 saw in relation to three lugim,
yeah,
right? And that's a lot more water. So that the issue, but it's still, it colors it, but it's not the wine.
Yeah.
Here, when you're dealing with a mikvah, right, and now the wine goes in, so it has not discolored the mikvah, right? The issue over there, it depends on a few factors over here. What's its appearance, right? The appearance of the three lug. It was the three lug and the wine together. Now it looks like wine, but now it goes into a mikvah, and now the mikvah does not look like the wine. So it's totally dissipated. It's a very small amount. You remember, our case before was three lug of water, less, a little less than three lug of water, or three lug of water, doesn't matter, right? Now, a little bit of wine goes into that three lug of water. So that's already going to be diluted. And that goes in, and that three lug that looks like wine now goes into a vastly larger mikvah. Okay, so now for sure, there's very little there. Here, we're talking about a barrel. A whole barrel of wine. There's a ton of wine in one spot, and you get your finger in that one spot. That's totally different than our case. Remember, we talk about a quart of wine going into three lugim. That was already a 200-to-1 ratio of water to wine. Still made it look like wine. Now it's going into 40 saw, which is way, way, way more. So that clearly is, the mikvah does not look like wine at all. That was a separate issue.
But there's an obvious
question. Now we're talking about a barrel of wine. So it's sitting in there, and it's, you can see it, it's red all over the place there, and his hand went in there. That's way different than our case that we were speaking about.
I would just say a barrel of wine to the Mediterranean Sea.
But we're not talking about 10 minutes later. We're talking about it just fell in, and now the guy goes into the mikvah. You could still see the discoloration. You know, look at the Pacific Ocean after a shark attack. And a shark kills some people. Yeah. You know what? That blood's going to be there for a little while. Not going to be there by tomorrow, but right after the shark attack, at least the movies I saw as a kid, you know, you see blood all over there. And at that point, he goes into the mikvah. That's what we're saying. On the other hand, if it's the Colorado Rapids, it ain't going to be there for very at all. That's the difference. Okay, now let's take it one more step, but we're going to go in reverse order, as you'll see. Here we're dealing with a guy who was Tomei, wants to be Tar. Okay, so let's take it, and now the Brisa says a second statement. Remember, we brought the Brisa to support him. The Brisa makes another statement, which is going to be the reverse.
Sorry, could I ask you, what happens if the barrel of wine falls into the river? Is it the same as the water?
No,
then?
we're saying it dissipates right away.
Yeah, the river's okay.
Flows.
We spoke about the it barrel flows. Of water. But we
it flows, same thing. Same thing. It's not going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Maybe someone down the river.
No, it's just totally dissipates.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to say that the opposite kind of thing. Here we're talking, up to now we're talking about a tummy person wants to be tar. How about v'chein kikar shel truma? Now let's talk about a loaf of bread that's truma. Okay, now you got to be careful that you don't want truma to ever be tamei. Once it's tamei, you got to burn it. There's nothing you can do with it. So let's pick the case over here. Now, right away, it's not limited to truma. Even if the loaf were not truma, it'll still be an issue, but we're going to think about truma because it has special problems with a coin, etc. That's fine. But it could be anything. But picking its keeper truma. Now what happens? Same Mediterranean Sea, same red water, everything from the barrel. Now what happened now? Shenuf al shum, that you got the it fell in there, the loaf falls in there, okay, after everything that we've been talking about. Which means you've got the barrel of wine goes into the water. You have the Tamei guy goes into the Mediterranean, and we say, and he was Tamei.
Yep.
And what do we say? He's still Tamei.
Yep.
Right? According to, and here the concern is, he's Tamei because his hand, let's say, went into the wine. Okay, so he's not Tar. So he remains Tamei. What happens to the wine now that he put his Tamei hand into the wine?
Becomes
Tummy?
The wine becomes tummy.
Sure.
Now, Now a loaf of truma falls into that wine.
Oh, this is like a second.
So shenafel sham into this wine, tame.
Yeah.
It becomes tame. Why? Since his immersion was not valid, and he's still therefore tame, okay. Must also be asserted that he contaminated the wine by touching it. Consequently, if truma bread falls into the sea at that spot, it becomes tame because of the assumption it touched the now contaminated wine.
Yeah.
So that's what the Brisa says, two statements. Statement number one, a barrel of wine falls into the Mediterranean Sea. The Tame guy goes into the Mediterranean Sea. We say the guy's Tame because we assume maybe one body part touched the wine. Then it says, Vechein, and also, if a piece of bread falls in, it will become Tame. So now the Gemara asks a question, why does the Brisa have to say both cases? It's really the same idea twice. Isn't it? In other words, the guy's tame, because he could have put his hand into the wine, and therefore it wasn't a good immersion. Well, if that's the case, then obviously the wine is tame, and anything that goes into the wine would also be tame. Why do you have to say another case, just to make it more exciting? It's the same principles. You only have to say one thing. In other words, I would say like this. Say the one case. The barrel of wine goes in. The tame guy goes in. He could have touched the wine. He remains like, stop. Now, don't write anything more, and now I'll ask, don't write a brisa, and let me just say, what can we deduce from this? What happens if a piece of bread falls into that wine now? Right. You tell me it's tummy. Yeah. Why need the mission to say it?
Yeah, sure.
That's when we're going to ask, my v'chein. Why does the brisa add, and so, about the bread? Obviously, if the person's immersion was invalid, the wine becomes tummy, and the bread becomes tummy. Do you see a possible difference in the two cases that you can answer this? Let's see how clever you can
be.
You have to come up with, I might think maybe here the bread wouldn't be tummy, and that's why the bride says say this tummy. What is the distinction between the tummy person and the bread?
The person is from our sign, so not to deceive other people that it works.
No, that's not the problem over here. It's for sure not the problem over here because it's not Marasayan. It's not Marasayan that he went into Mayan Shuvim. His hand goes into the wine. It wasn't a kosher immersion. Well, the difference is, the man, how does he start the story going into the water? What's his status when he goes into the water?
Tummy.
What's the status of the loaf?
Tar.
Maybe you only say this ruling if something's tummy and wants to get out of its status to go from tummy to tar. Boy, you got to be pretty sure it's okay. In fact, you got some red wine in the water there. Well, we're not going to let you change your status because of that. But maybe that law is only that you don't change status. So because maybe yes, maybe you don't. You got to be sure that it was a completely kosher immersion. The fact that there's a possibility, a strong possibility, that there's wine over there. Could be maybe he didn't, but we assume he probably did. Therefore, you can't change him from tame to tar. But now to go to say the same rule to make something tar to tame, maybe not. And that's what Nora is going to suggest. Mal say, I might have thought if I'd ask you just to deduce the second law of the bread falling into the water. No, the reason why the case of the brice of the man is tame hussam over there by the man who goes in, uki, we maintain. The gavra, the person achaske on his previous status. When the tame guy went in, he's a tame fellow. As long as it's not clear that it's changed, we don't change it. Right, here we go. 18. The general rule for resolving legal questions arising from doubtful situations is to assume that the previous legal status has not changed until it's been proven to be changed. This legal principle is known as chazaka. Okay, the Gemara cites biblical principles. This principle is used both for stringency and for leniency. Okay, so what's going on over here? So over here, the guy was tame, and since it's not clear his status has changed, why? Since the person had been tame before his immersion, and there's some doubt whether he became tar by immersing, because could be his hand stuck into the wine. The law thinks that he resolved the doubt by assuming that his previous status did not change and that he's still tame. Following this line of reasoning, it could be argued the opposite, which is hacha. But here with the bread, we're starting from the different position. Uki truma chazaka. Maybe then we should assume what was the chazaka by the bread that was tar.
Exactly.
So we continue. You know, you always continue to assume things are; they don't change. So what we say is, are we 100% sure he put his hand in the wine? No, we're not 100% sure, but it's a good chance. Now, if the guy starts tame, you want to make him tar. You have to be 100% sure that there's no problems.
Yeah.
You want to take him out of a status. Yeah. It's much harder to take someone out of status than to maintain the status quo. To get him out, you got to be 100% sure he went in a kosher mikvah 100%. If there's a strong doubt, there's wine right there. He could put his hand in the wine. Well, sorry, it's too much of a doubt. We can't work it out. But on the other hand, when you're dealing with truma, where it's tar or anything that's tar, why should I assume that it became tame, that it touched the red? That's what I would have thought had we not said it a second time in the Mishnah. Kamash Malon, therefore the Brisa, rather, I meant the Brisa. Brisa says, brings us the second case to say that the loaf is also tame, because we don't follow the rule of the Chazaka in that case. That's the Chiddush.
Yeah.
Now, the Gemara does not explain why we do not rule the truma loaf tar based on the chazaka having previously been tar. Now we have the question, so why is it not tar? In other words, the question now is, we understand why the Brisa mentioned the bread case, because we could not have easily deduced that from the case of the tamei guy. So now I say, but that's the chiddush. The insight of the Brisa is, not only will the man remain tamei, but the bread will become tamei. That's what the Brisa is saying. Question is, well, why are we saying that now? Now we thought it was so simple, we would have deduced it, but no, now we see there's a difference. The man started tummy, the loaf started tar. Why is the Brisa saying that? So see, Siach Yitzchak and Pirkas Avram are in Padua who discuss this.
Don't we always try to be stringent on each end? So that way,
well, you can't play it both ways. If you have a chazaka, you have a chazaka. If you're going with chazaka, you're going with chazaka. That's the rule of chazaka. And if I have a chazaka, we don't assume I'm tummy. Right, you got to be sure to make the guy tell me first. So let's see what he says. Possibly, we may explain the Gemara's answers as concluding that when the rabbis decreed tum upon the person immersed in the spot where the cask fell, the biblical tumma is removed by the immersion. They did so because they assumed on the rabbinic level that the wine had definitely not dispersed. Thus, including this assumption would be the law that even if a previously tar object that fell there would be ruled tummy. Okay, this explanation fits well with the textual versions, etc., etc. Okay, anyway, it's a question. We're going to have to leave it at that. Give you some work to do on Shabbos. Okay, that ends this sugya of the waters. Okay, now we're going to start for about 10 minutes or so. Yes, what's your question?
So are we saying the person's tummy transfers too much to the wine and the wine transfers too much to the...
Yes. Exactly. So now we still have to work out, you know, why don't we say the bread had its chazaka? But that's...
And the person's tummy goes into the mikvah and then at night he becomes tar. So why would you...
No. Once you go into a mikvah, you are tar. There's other halachas regarding kosher. If a kohen wants to eat truma and he's tummy,
yes.
Two things have to happen. He has to go to a mikvah. He is tar now. He touches anyone. Tar. But there's a second rule. He can't eat truma, even if you're tar, till sunset. And sometimes there's certain tumas that require not only sunset, but you have to bring a korban the next day for you to be able to eat kachim. So there's different steps, different halachas. When you're talking about eating kachim, it's not enough to merely be tar. If you were tameh, you go to the mikveh, you are tar, but not tar enough to eat kachim. So if it's truma, which is not so strict, wait for nightfall, you can eat it. But if it's, let's say, korbanos, let's say, then you got to wait till, you have a certain tuma that's stronger. And the tuma is so strong that it's not enough to go to the mikvah. It's not enough to wait the sun to set. You got to bring a korban afterwards for kapara, then you can eat kachim. But you could be tar and still not able to eat truma. So theoretically, the kohen could go to the mikvah. He could touch truma before nightfall, but he just can't eat it. You know, that's idea tful yom. Okay, let's start the next mission. We're going back into Eidim Zomamim. Okay, now we're going to really get into an interesting discussion. We'll do the mission at least. Now, we know, we already mentioned, if you recall, we were looking for the source of when you can't give the Edom Zomim the punishment they're supposed to get. We have said already in the Mishnah, you lash them instead. Right? If he said the guy was a son of a divorcee, was a chalutza, whatever, we can't give him that punishment. We learned from the Psukim that we lash him instead. Right at the end of that Gemara, he said, well, why don't we lash, even we can't give him the major punishment, why don't we lash him for swearing falsely? Remember the question, we asked that question? What do you need a pasuk for? He swore falsely. It's a negative commandment. You lash the guy for a negative commandment. Forget about Hazama. Forget about Zomim. Lash him. If you can't give him the punishment, lash him because he was a liar and he transgressed a negative commandment. You shouldn't lie. And what did the Gemara answer? Our mission is going like the opinion that says we don't lash for an aver that is not an action. Mm-hmm. That's how we left it over there. Now it's going to creep back in here to a certain degree. We're going to talk about here now is how about every time you're an Eid Zomim, every time you're an Eid, and whatever you lied about, you lied that the guy owes money, you lied that the guy should get lashed. Whatever. And then you're proven to be wrong. Okay, so you do to him what do you want to do to the other guy. Pay the money, lash him. The more in Mishnah now is going to the question, but wait a minute. Every time there's Edim Zomimim, there's two things going on over here. Number one, the Torah says there's a law that if you're a false witness, you get the punishment you want to give. But isn't there always the issue that you lied under oath? Uh-huh. And you should get punished for lying under oath, regardless of the other guy, what you want to do to the other guy.
Yeah.
So therefore, there's the question, why shouldn't every case of Edim Zomimim, no matter what we're going to do to the Edim Zomimim, whatever he lied, money, lashes, let's say, yeah, so he pays the money, he gets lashed, but then we're going to say, I'm going to hit you for another thing. Now we know for sure you lied. For lying, we're going to lash you separately for the lie. That's the issue in this mission we're going to have a machlokas about. So far, we weren't dealing with the issue of lying. We just brought in one line at the end of the second page where he said, well, if you can't give him you try and figure you can't give him the punishment he's supposed to get, so the mission of the lash, what's the source? What do you need a source for? Just go to the fact he lied. He said, no, it was no action. But now, so regardless, we're going to see there's a machlokas about this. It's not everybody agrees. Some say that if there's no action, you do lash. It's a machlokas. We're going to get into it in the next couple days or weeks.
Is lying considered not an action?
Yes, because an action is something which you do. Speaking is not an action. Uh-huh. Speaking is not an action means you stole, you caused something bad to happen.
So if
you punch someone in the nose, you stole, you're eating treif. You're doing something.
Physical.
Really do. You're Machal Shabbos. Right? But talk is cheap. It's not because they're an action. It's not actionable to be lashed. You got to do something.
Yeah, so if you were to do lashing or something like that for lying, then you would do the same for Lashon Hara or any gossip, anything. It's the same idea.
Exactly. Yeah. So therefore, that's a good point. So if you hold, we don't lash them without an action. We don't lash for that.
Right.
Okay, now, so now we're looking at this issue. Shouldn't we always give the guy every Eid Zomim should get another problem, another punishment of being lashed on top of what he has to pay back? That's a machlokas in this Mishnah. So here's the case. Me'idim anu b'ish ploni. They testified for a person. We testify about this and this person. That he did what? Shechai l'chaver masem. He owes his friend 200 zuz. Okay, and they lied. We find out later they're liars. So, Benim Tzuzom, we find that they're liars. So, says the Tanakhama, Lokin Umishalmin. They get lashed and they pay. That's what he says. Why? How do you give them two punishments? Because there's two separate sins. Why? Shalom Hashem Hamivin Lemakos. Because the name that brings them to lashes, or that spirit, the Avera that brings you to be lashed, it does not, maybe the Lashem does not bring him for payment. In other words, there's two separate issues, right? Okay? He's saying the biblical verse that mandates the penalty of lashes for false testimony is not the one that dictates the reciprocal punishment of Zomimim witnesses, right? Since the respective penalties derived from two different verses, both are carried out. Look below. These are the two separate psukim. Ten commandments. You shall not bear false witness. That's a negative commandment So you bear a false witness, you should be lashed for bearing a false witness. Then there's a second point, you shall do to him as he conspired to do to his brother. That's it. So the first opinion is saying, you give them both. Who says this? Very important. Reb Meir. This is like Reb Meir. Now remember, guys, always put in your mind.
Never.
Whenever you're like Reb Meir, continue the discussion with an honest, open mind. But you always on the back of your mind, the ruling of the Gemara is, we never paskin like Reb Meir. Just remember, except in one case.
This is it.
Okay? Okay, except one, but this is not the case.
No.
See, just know it's not going to be Reb Meir. I'm just telling you, just to pick up your little savvy when you're learning Gemara. When you're Reb Meir, you know he ain't going to win. Now you got to learn it. It's still Torah. We don't dismiss it, but he isn't going to win. Okay, now that's what he does. Give him both. But the rabbis say. Now, what do you see right after those letters? Vav Ches Chav in the Gemara. What do you see right after it? Right after that yellow block, what's immediately after it?
Call?
No, there's something else there.
It's a hay.
That's not. I said immediately.
It's a hay.
A little hay.
Yeah.
Okay, that little hay is always another tip off. That's a reference. It's like a marker to. Where is it? Upper left hand side here. I'm going to take it right up to the top. Now, after that chuff of, you see a hay, right?
Mm-hmm.
See that little hay?
Yep.
See that big hay?
Yeah, now I see it better.
Okay.
That's a bigger hay.
Now, if you're a little clever, you'd be able to figure out what all these little squiggly marks are. I'm going to tell you what it is. Mem Yud Yud, Maimoni, that's the Rambam. Perik Yud Ches, Mehilchus Edus, Halacha Aleph. When he's going to tell you that, whenever he puts you that hay, usually tells you that's who the law is like. It's always a little tip off.
Uh-huh.
Right? Just whenever you look at the Gemara, you see him up, always look for that little letter. He's going at this is a commentary that he'll go to the source hundreds of years later when the Rambam wrote his law, or where it says Tov Ches Mem Tur Choshen Mishpat Shulchan Aruch. He's quoting those sources. That means he's going to be quoted as the ruling law. So just to know, what is that called when it's movies when you give away the ending? Right. It's called a spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm being a spoiler, okay? Mm-hmm. By being a spoiler, I'm telling you, number one, when everything with Reb Meir, the law is never like Reb Meir, and that little letter is telling you what the law is like. So now that means the next statement, ve'chachamim omrim, this is going to be the halacha. Kol ha'meshalem, anyone who pays, ain't a laika, he doesn't get lashed. Right? That's for
so the witness pays, he doesn't get
once you're getting once you're paying, you don't get lashed. The reason for that we'll learn shortly in the Gemara.
So then you can't punish him anymore.
No, but he does pay. He pays, but he doesn't get lashed.
No,
why? The Gemara's gonna discuss. We're gonna discuss. That was case number one. Case number two. May eat him on a beach boy. I testify to this fellow, Shuchai Malchus. They lie and say the guy is to get lashed. He ate treif. We warned him not to treif. He ate treif. He's supposed to get lashed. Now we find out they're liars. So according to Reb Meir, how many lashes do they get? Vinim Suzov, you find out the liars. Loki Shmuel, you lash them 80 times. Two times 40. Why? Mishum lo sana berechet shaker for the aver of thou shalt not swear falsely.
Yeah.
And also mishum vasis and loki shem, you do to them what they want to do to the other guy. They want to get him lashed. So there's one aver of Adim Zomimim. They do to him what they wanted to do to them. So you get lashed 40. And then they get 40 for sinning of lying. Double. It's consistently divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the same Rabbi Meir. It's very consistent. Doesn't matter money. Doesn't matter lashes. Whatever the Zomimim did, they get on top of whatever they deserve to get for what they wanted. The other guy, they get lashed on top for transgressing.
Those shall consecutively?
Well, obviously not, because they're not going to handle all that.
Chachamim
omrim, the rabbis say again consistently, and the rule be them, ain lokin ella arboim. You only lash 40. What's the reasons for all that? We will see tomorrow.